connecting to the internet.
Internet.
Networking software.
World Wide Web for the web. Computer today.
Computer.
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 Computer. NetSurfer Pro.
All right, so Matthew.
Mm-hmm.
We've done a lot of really good openings over the years.
Have we?
We've done a lot of openings over the years.
Sure, I'll take that.
And we have in front of us a veritable charcuterie board of options with the current topic. We could do the ancient reptilian voice.
And the higher-pitched limbic system voice.
Or we could, of course, do the classic character of Kuno.
Mm-hmm.
We could even maybe sort of do like a sort of detective-y thing where it's like a call and response thing of like, you know, oh, I'm gonna grab the body, and then you'll be like, no, don't grab the body. I'm your limbic system.
I'm your voice of reason. The body is stinky. It smells bad.
Here's the real problem. I don't have my gun this episode.
Oh, okay. The gun that famously transforms you into a different bit.
Yes.
Much like the gun from the manga Reborn, if you've ever read that.
Yes. We call it two takes.
Yes.
And so, unfortunately, I can't do any really good bits this time.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like if we just foreshadow the fact that we could do one of many bits, because we're a podcast, a comedy podcast.
We're definitely a comedy podcast first, and a everything else podcast second.
Everything else, all at once.
Yes, everything else, everywhere, all at once, all of the time, at the end of time.
it's my favorite Fall Out Boy album.
We have something very interesting to talk about, and I don't know if we can fully do it justice, but we will try.
Yep. So, in 2021...
You know, speaking of the Game Awards...
Yeah, speaking of the Game Awards...
This topic, this game, won a Game Award.
Oh, really? What award was that?
Well, it happened to win Best Role-Playing Game, Best Independent Game, and Best Narrative in 2019 at the Game Awards. The Game Awards being the awards for games.
The Game Awards.
Yeah.
That's a whole other episode, frankly, but the Game Awards is, as of right now, the biggest thing that's... the biggest centralized thing that the video games have for awards. And so, winning an award at the Game Awards is still... has some interest to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is, of course, Disco Elysium. Which was first released in 2019, and then later re-released in 2021 under the Final Cut, which added sort of a bunch of stuff. It was created by Zaum, Z-A-U-M, Zaum, a artist collective helmed by writer and designer Robert Kurvitz. Kurvitz had been sort of creating the world of Disco Elysium, or the world of Elysium, since he was a teenager. He originally had written a novel set in the world that did not sell well, but later was sort of convinced to make a video game out of the world, and that is the game we're talking about. He and sort of a lot of the original team members are Estonian, which leads to a shared cultural background that heavily influences the game itself. Other key members include artist Alexander Roskov, other writer Helen Heinpeer, who I believe Helen had also gone on stage to accept the Game Award.
Nice.
There's a lot of inspirations they've listed before, such as just sort of Soviet-era artwork, the works of the Estonian poet Arvi Siig, and the video game Planescape Torment.
Which makes a lot of sense based on my limited knowledge of Planescape Torment, actually.
Mm-hmm.
This is the part of the podcast where normally where we say, like, all right, we're about to talk about this game and spoil it in quite a bit, so if you are interested, go play it. We're still going to pretty much say, if you are interested, find a means to play it. However, it is worth noting that there is ongoing legal disputes between Zaum and the publisher and some of the number of the original creators and artists, it seems.
Yes.
The short version is that apparently there was a hostile takeover of Zaum, basically. And so a lot of the original creators got ousted, and they are still ongoing, there are still ongoing legal issues with this.
Yeah, so the creators are saying that the person who took over the company as CEO did so illegally, and that person is saying that they fired the creators due to toxic work culture and harassment and not any sort of, like, business related, like not trying to, like, cut them out of the profit.
Yeah.
And yeah, those are all ongoing lawsuits.
Yeah. We are not going to make any particular legal claim here. However, what I will say is that if you already own the game and have not played it, now is your chance. If you do not own the game and would like to play it, maybe find a way, maybe borrow it from a friend.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe find a way to play it without giving money just yet until the full story has come to light and we understand what actually happened.
Mm-hmm.
Because right now I don't feel comfortable saying to actually purchase the game. However, with that said, we've already purchased the game. We've already played the game. Let's talk about it.
Yes. So, I want to just give a very brief description of the mechanics, because most of the game is in the narrative and the writing and the story and all that, and once we get into that, we will be getting into that.
Yes.
So I just want to get the mechanics sort of out of the way, because some of that will also help explain sort of why the story is how it is.
Yes.
So, Disco Elysium is an RPG that is heavily based off of old classical RPGs, or CRPGs, as you may have heard, where the gameplay is heavily based off of, in turn, tabletop RPGs. Which is to say that you have a character with, like, stats, and you use those stats to make rolls and skill checks. Those skill checks, in turn, determining what you can do. There are four main stats in this case, which are intellect, physique, motorics, and psyche, and each of those has six sort of substats or skills that branch off of it. And when you start a playthrough, and as you progress and level up, you get skill points that can go into any of those 24 skills. Most skills are non-combat related. There are a few, I believe physical instrument and coordination are the two sort of main combat skills. Most of them, though, are related to, like, some sort of investigation, intuition, sort of your being in tune with nature, being able to withstand things both physically and mentally. And that is because the game is mostly about the mystery rather than about RPG fights.
Yes.
It's worth noting that when I say it uses die rolls, it's specifically a 2d6 system. Now, something kind of cool is that each skill is represented by a sort of mental voice in the main character's head. Oftentimes, these will just sort of pop in. The game sort of runs skill checks in the background constantly, and if there's a conversation where a skill check is passed, then that skill's voice will, like, chime in with something. These could be completely useless. For example, logic will tend to respond to metaphors by pointing out how the metaphor can't be real. But sometimes they're also very useful.
Yeah.
Most of the useful skill checks, though, are in, like, dialogue options, where it gives a difficulty for the skill check. Sort of, like, easy, medium, hard, impossible.
So for a quick example, in plain terms, one of the first checks you make in the game, which we will get to very soon, is to grab your tie off of the fan in your room. This is, I think, a physical instrument check, or maybe like I think it's an endurance check. The idea being, let's say it's endurance. If you have, say, 4 in your physical instrument skill, in your motoric skill, then you will have a baseline +4 to that check. Then there are also skill points that you can allocate throughout the game, but let's just say you don't have any of that right now. The game will say, you know, okay, this is a 12 check, it's challenging. So to complete the check, you would need to roll within the game an 8 or above, because you have the +4, to actually complete it. And the game, if you aren't comfortable with numbers or probabilities like that, the game very handily says, this is a, you know, 46% chance that you will actually get it. However, in addition to just raw skills, there's also many times various little actions you can do to help with it. So in the case of your necktie, one of the first things you do is turn off the fan itself. It's slowly rotating, and if you turn it off, then you will get a, like, +2 modifier because the fan's obviously off.
Right.
Which, thanks to how the probability of 2d6 works, will bump that up from a, like, you know, 46 to not just like a, you know, oh, it's now a 40, like, 9% or whatever. No, it's probably more like a 67% or something, because 7 is the most common thing you can roll on 2d6.
Sure. It's worth noting that for some of these skill checks, you can only attempt them once.
Yes.
Some of them you can attempt any number of times, but there is a time-gated sort of cooldown. One such one is being able to try to adjust your face in the mirror. Your face is all fucked up. You can try to make it look normal, but if you fail, then you have to wait for the next day. Some of them you can only retry once your modifier goes up. And this normally would mean you could put a skill point into that check. One example is there's an ice cream machine that you have to sort of yank the door open, but it's frozen shut. If your physical instrument is not high enough and you fail it, you could come back after putting a point into physical instrument, and then you'll be able to try it one more time. If you fail that, you'll have to increase your physical instrument further. You can also increase your skills via, like, equipment. You can wear hats, clothes, pants, shoes. Sometimes you'll have, like, main hand or offhand items. Like, if you have a crowbar, it adds +6 to that specific skill check. Or, like, it gives you an easier skill check option.
Yes.
And then also you can drink and do drug, which temporarily boost your stats, but have pretty negative side effects afterwards.
But also will help you if you have already attempted a check and have failed it. Doing drugs and or drink is one of the few ways without putting skill points to actually reattempt it.
Yes, exactly. There's one major mechanic that is left, which is the thought cabinet. As you adventure, you'll hear, like, an idea or you'll see something that will give your character the sort of genesis of a thought. And you can put it in your thought cabinet, which has a few slots available to have your character ponder over it and think about it, which means that there's essentially a timer that happens before this thought fully goes into effect. Once it's done, then you get a more significant bonus, but sometimes these will lock that slot of your thoughts, meaning you can't put another thought in that slot. Sometimes it just returns to your side and frees up a slot, and it's like, well done. Sometimes these are required for certain quests. Like, there's a piece of information you have to think about and stew on. Sometimes it's just optional. Sometimes it just is a sort of a funny side venture you can go through.
Yes.
All the thoughts have descriptions, and some of them have pretty funny names.
So, why don't we start at day one?
Yes.
All right. Day one in Disco Elysium opens with a text scroll and voiceover by the ancient reptilian brain. And the ancient reptilian brain tells you about how there's absolutely nothing but sweet, beautiful void. And there's no reason to want anything other than that. Unfortunately, no matter what choices you make, you will have to wake up. Now, when you wake up, you, the player, probably don't know a whole lot. Fortunately, your character has literally gone on a a 3-day bender that has resulted in him completely losing his memory and not just who he is and where he is and stuff like that. It is constantly recurring that he has lost concept of the basic grasp of reality. Your character wakes up not knowing what, like, money is, and, like, not knowing what world we're on. Like, the fact that you are on a planet called Elysium is outside knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
You are more or less forced to get up, pick yourself up, grab all of your clothes and such. Presumably the first task, quote-unquote, that you're going to attempt is probably finding your second shoe. Now, this room has a lot of little bits of things that you can attempt. For example, one of the first real introductions to the world you can get is when you look in the mirror, you note that your character is doing an expression. This is known as The Expression, and it's probably one of the first real bits of world lore that you get, because it was an expression adopted by a really famous pop star and, like, cultural icon in the 20s, who was really disco. Disco was in the 20s, you see. And so your character, is attempting to emulate it by doing the expression. You can try to stop doing the expression. It's one of the hardest checks in the game. It's really funny.
And it hurts you if you fail.
Yes. Now, you can also, to get a hint that your other shoe is probably outside, you, one, only find one shoe, and two, there's a broken window in your room, and so, when you, click on the window itself, there is a possibility to do a logic check, I believe, which sort of, you know, shows you, like, okay, well, whatever it was, you know, this size, it was thrown outside because that's where all the glass is, etc. That's probably where your other shoe is. So, you walk out. Probably going to grab your shoe, probably going to pass by someone who says, "Hello, officer, on your way." You might talk to them and you might talk to her and ask her, like, "Hang on, what do you mean, officer?" And she's like, "Oh, you're an officer of the law, I guess." You go downstairs. So to give you more information than you get directly from the game, you are in a cafe known as the Whirling in Rags.
Sort of a cafe inn.
Yeah, a cafe / inn, INN. Not a cafe inn.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a manager there, there's a lady there, nice old lady, and there's a third fellow in an orange bomber jacket. And as you...
Oh, I love that guy's YouTube videos.
Yeah.
The one about Roblox? Banger.
Love him. And so, you end up going down, probably attempting to leave, and the man in the orange bomber jacket is like, "Ah, hey... You're the officer I'm here to meet, right?" And you can go, "Yeah." Or you can go, "No." Or you can go, "What?" this is Lieutenant Kim Kitsuragi. He is going to be your partner for the entire game, and he is the best.
Yes, I would die for him.
I would die for him, and he would die for me.
It's true. Yeah, Kim is a fantastic character. So to explain sort of the premise of what's going on here, this is going to be a bit of spoilers because much of the story of the game is about finding out what the hell is going on. You are in a city called Martinez, in a sort of city-state country called Revachol. And Martinez is a sort of dock port, like a harbor area, mainly used for trade. But it has fallen on pretty hard times. Part of that is there is a union strike going on the docks. So Tommy is halfway there currently.
Yeah.
And recently there has been a lynching that happened literally in the backyard of the Whirling in Rags. And you were sent there along with Kim Kitsuragi to investigate this lynching, murder, whatever. It's been several days since the body was first found and seemingly first killed, so it's disfigured and disgusting, but it's what you gotta do because you are part of the Revachol Citizens Militia.
Yep. The RCM. Now, I know what you might be saying, dear fellow leftists. Oh god, I have to play as a cop? Don't worry. There's nothing in this game that doesn't go heavily analyzed and scrutinized.
Yeah, this game, we'll go into the sort of way it uses these ideologies further much later. We have to cover some groundwork, though.
Yes.
Really badly.
So, let's, I am a speedrunner. I just want to know part of the mystery. We're gonna be taking this in, you know, a couple of layers. Layer one here is, what is the baseline mystery? The man who has been lynched, seemingly, is a...
He's a scab.
He's a scab.
Pinkerton.
He's a scab, but he's also a guard, I believe, who was working for or working under Wild Pines.
Wild Pines Logistics Company. And part of the problem, or part of the strike going on, is that the Wild Pine Logistics Company uses the Revachol Harbor to ship things, but the harbor's locked down and all of their cargo is inside the harbor. So the Wild Pines sent these guards to essentially bust the strike, either trying to get the crowd and the populace on the side of ending the strike, or if that fails, use force. But crossing fingers not to use force.
Yeah. Now, the person who was hanged was part of the use force tactic. That was just sort of like sitting and, you know, in wait. He was palling around and he eventually found himself hung in a tree.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we don't learn about the literal happenstance of how that happened for quite a while. But initially, it seems like this was a political hanging, basically. This was spurred on by the union itself, just stringing somebody up, specifically a militaristic branch of the union, probably, who kind of just wanted to escalate tensions.
Yes.
Your first order of business is basically to either A, well, to A, interview the people who are there about the body and, you know, how it got there, who it was. B, get the body down and do an autopsy. And then C, figure out what happened. Figure out what the murder was about.
There is also a whole side mystery about you, the player character, which involves things such as, where did your gun go? Where did your police badge go? Where did your cop car go? Where did your name go?
Yeah.
Who are you?
Yeah, who are you? Who are you, the person?
Yeah. Where did all your paperwork for this case go? Luckily, Kim Kitsuragi is very neat and orderly, and loves the finer details of the process. So he is there to help you out and also cover your ass.
Yes.
Also, you have to pay for your rent.
Oh, yeah, that's
right.
It's
worth noting that the manager at the Whirling in Rags is pissed with you because you broke his favorite bird statue in one of your late night benders. And you also broke the window and you trashed your room and you need to pay for it.
Yep.
So you better get some money, punk.
Which leads to one of the first questions that you can ask to basically everyone being, hey, can I have some money?
Yeah.
It is hilarious. There are so many hilarious things, and this is one of them. But, as we said, there's multiple ways to do various things. To get the body down, one of the few ways that you can actually get it down pretty early is to straight up shoot it down.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you are missing your gun, of course. However, Kim is not. And if you suggest it to Kim, you will he will lift it up. He lifts his gun up, attempt to shoot it down. He will miss, unfortunately. And then if you ask to a try, he will hand his gun and you will get a try as well. It is a red check, however, so you either succeed or you don't.
Mm-hmm.
Another way to get it down, of course, is to ask the dock workers for help, which is probably a bad idea since by the time that they show up on day two, they just straight up admit that they did, in fact, put the body up there. So case closed, that's the whole game.
Yeah. So, these are the Hardy Boys, led by Tom Hardy, who I think is an actor?
Yeah.
Maybe he doesn't have the name Tom, maybe I'm making that up. But, Hardy, they sort of have a sort of their own mini militia going on. It looks like they're sort of the union muscle, like mobsters, but they mainly just talk about how the RCM hasn't really been policing Martinez at all. And so they would much rather take things into their own hands since they're clearly being ignored.
Yep.
And yeah, he just says like, yeah, we did it. We hung him up in the tree. What are you going to do about it? Arrest us?
Don't try and arrest them. It's a bad idea.
Yeah. It's also worth noting that the body is hung up by a shipping cable, like a yes. cargo cable used when lifting cargo. So there's clearly, you know, some investigation needed to be done inside the harbor, but the harbor is currently being barred.
Yeah, so that's another big thing is the harbor itself is being barred and locked off because of the ongoing strike. And one of the big people that you really need to talk to.
Big people.
Is the leader of the union, Everard Clare.
Oh, I was thinking of a different big guy.
Oh. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's the other big guy.
So yeah, there's a lot of different players in this game, except there's only a one-player game, but there's a lot of important characters. I want to go back to the body, though.
Yes.
So, you're with King Kitsuragi, And you go to the body. Before you can even take it down, there's this little shit throwing pebbles at it. This is Kuno, another fan favorite character.
He's so good.
He's just a little kid with a fiery mouth, with a lot of passion and nowhere to direct it. There is also a girl nearby that has been nicknamed Kuno S, and she is much more secretive, and Kuno kind of refuses to let you talk to her ever. Both of them are little shits.
Yeah, both of them are little shits. Kuno is... Kuno is even more specifically a little shit who's also... You can pass an electrochemistry check to find out he's just straight up on speed.
Mm-hmm.
So that tells you what kind of neighborhood this is.
Yeah. Kuno disrespects authority. There's just this whole mini game of trying to calm him down. You can also just, like, encourage him.
Yeah.
Which is great. Dialogue choices in this game, they tend to range from, like, good cop, bad cop, outlandish cop, ridiculous cop, not even a cop.
Yeah.
Like, there's so many ways you could play your character, and very few of them are level-headed.
Yeah, it's very beautiful. So, as we said, there's a lot of players in this. As far as literal facts, we're going to try and keep it, you know, thin.
Mm-hmm.
This is sort of more of a discussion about the, you know, the big thematic things, the interesting things this does as a game. But to get through some of the baseline facts sort of quickly, when you talk to Everard Clare, the leader of the Union, he essentially denies that he knew anything about what was happening. He puts it all on the muscle because he is the leader of the mob boss, basically. It would be in his best interest to not know anything. The body itself, you do perform a field autopsy and find out a number of really interesting little facts. The autopsy is honestly one of my favorite parts of the game. It's good.
The autopsy has, like, a really large chunk of the writing and, by extension, voice acting in the game. It has so many little details to it, so many options. You get a ton of information about the player character and about Kim, and a little bit about Kuno. And the body is handled with this sort of morbid reverence.
Yeah.
Like, it is accepting and very upfront about the concept of death and the way bodies act after death. And you are sort of, you treat the body with a sense of, like, trying to respect the dead throughout this process.
Yeah. It's
very poetic as well. Disgusting, but poetic.
Yeah. It never, like, loses the sort of fleshy fact of it, but, like, a big part of it is literally talking to the body.
Mm-hmm.
And the body essentially talks back and kind of tells you the facts of, like, this is the man who died here is a man who lived a very hard life that knew very few breaks from it, and, like, it's just sort of, it's really respectful of that fact.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's really respectful of the fact that, despite the fact that you go on to learn that, you know, the guy was, like, a contract killer, the guy was hired muscle, that's pretty obvious just from the outset, but, like, the way that it still handles, like, the reverence for him as a person is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I said day two. Probably a little other thing to explain is that the game has a running clock. The running clock matters up till day three, basically.
So the way the clock works is it progresses whenever you do something in the game. Traveling between screens, I don't think, actually progresses time.
Not really, no.
However, dialogue progresses time, making skill checks does. Any sort of game option that advances things further. It's worth noting, though, that dialogue only progresses it the first time you do that option. You can't just, like, loop through a conversation being like, okay, let's get to dinner time.
Yeah. As somebody who doesn't really like real time or time mechanics in games all that much, this handles it very, very well, to where you're not going to miss anything because of the clock itself. The clock only ever unlocks more things for you to do.
Right, and you have time to think.
Yes. You have time to think and time to breathe in this game.
Mm-hmm.
And time to do side content. But, again, main content. The big thing that happens on day two is that the Hardy Boys come into the Whirling and Rags, and they just straight up admit to doing the murder. The big event that happens on day three is that the waterways get, like, the waterways are locked off, and so you can't get to basically the other half of Martinez down by the, like, the coast. But once the waterways are unlocked on Wednesday, you can close them, forming a bridge that allows you to go to the other half of the district.
Mm-hmm.
And so the possibilities of the world expand about 3 days in, meaning that A, you are, you know, hyper-focused on everything you can do for those first 2 days, and B, it doesn't overwhelm you with a shit ton of stuff to do right off of the bat.
Yeah.
Although it does kind of overwhelm you a bit with a shit ton of stuff to do right off the bat, but the fact that it gives you 2 days is honestly kind of really nice.
Mm-hmm.
Because by the time you're, like, but on day one, you might be like, oh god, there's so much to do, I'm never going to do all of this. On Tuesday, you will struggle to find things to do.
Yes.
Like, there is enough in those 2 days to do everything you want based off of what's within your grasp and more.
Yeah. Let's see. So, I want to kind of go through the main plot. Again, this is going to be spoilers. We'll make some pit stops along the way. But so, first off, you've given the body an autopsy. You know that the union's involved. You need to get into the docks. How do you do that? There is a secret passageway that requires you to go through a little shack kind of behind the Whirling and Rags. This is actually Kuno's shack.
Yep.
It's Kuno's hideout. Kuno is a very cool character in retrospect because it really shows the impact that the world and the situations in it and all the poverty has on the youth. Kuno is like one of the youngest characters that you actually talk to. I would say Kuno S, but Kuno S you barely get a chance to talk to. But, like, Kuno's dad is dead, and Kuno, you know, he kind of just does drugs because it's available to him, it's around him.
I thought his dad was alive.
No, his dad dies.
Does he?
Yeah.
Oh, shit, I did not do all of the Kuno content, so I did not know that.
Yeah, there's a whole apartment complex, and when you go in there into the place that's presumed to be Kuno's, you see his dad is just dead in, like, on a table.
Shit.
Like, OD'd or something.
Shit.
Though the shack is really interesting, because there's, like, art projects in there. There's a radio station that Kuno listens to on a radio. There's, like, this flea circus sort of thing. With, like, dead bugs on it. It's like Kuno has a creative drive, but he doesn't have the support for it, nor does he have really the means or resources for it.
Yeah.
And his difficult home life just only adds to that. You can go through Kuno's shack. That's one way to get through the gate. There is another, however, and it involves a certain racist.
Yes, so there are three racists in this game.
Yes. Something about this game. So, as far as, like, political ideologies go, it's usually pretty, like, neutral. It criticizes things. It shows, you know, there are positives about things. But racism, it has no problem with just shitting on.
Yes.
All the racists are terrible people, and the game calls you out if you ever try to agree with them.
Yes.
Kim shouts at you.
Yes. It's one of the few times Kim says fuck.
He gets mad at you, and it's one of the few times he gets mad.
Yeah. Now, the first racist you're going to probably meet is the lorry driver. When you meet him, he smiles widely and says, "Welcome to Ravishal." And I love your dialogue options for this, because your character is just completely, like, doesn't understand what's going on. Mm-hmm. So he's like, "Oh, Ravishal, I know where that is. That's where we are." And then Kim is like, "Don't welcome to Ravishal me, you fuck."
Yeah.
And, like, they have a back and forth where Kim is just like, it's essentially just like, "I've been here longer than you." Like, "I've been here longer than you fuckers have."
Yeah, it's worth noting that, so this world doesn't have exact, like, real-life locations. It has sort of comparisons. Yeah. And Kim is essentially from Eastern Asia, like, you know, maybe like Japan, but in the Elysium world.
Yeah.
Or at least he is half that nationality.
Yeah, I think it's like Samsaran. I'm not sure what the actual word for it is, but there are types, essentially. Like, it's like, for example, Ravishal itself is French, I believe. Mm-hmm. Kim speaks in a French accent. A lot of people speak in French accent. French is sort of like interspersed within a lot of the words itself. But, like, the game doesn't call that French, it calls it Ravishalese.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's that sort of thing where Kim is Asian, but, like, the Elysium version of Asian. So you meet the racist,
mm-hmm.
you talk to the racist, you leave the racist. At the docks, at the head of the docks, there is a big, strong man with tattoos and just all kinds of... He's a big, strong, intimidating guy, and he's the second racist.
Yes, this is Measurehead, named because he practices the discredited art of phrenology, which is not a science, not really an art at all. It's just a conspiracy theory that racists use.
Yeah, it in the real world, it used to be taken as real science that, like, you know, you could essentially determine somebody's intelligence by the shape of their forehead and the size of their eyebrow and stuff. It has since been intensely, obviously discredited, and anybody who current day would try and propose it, is an racist. Idiot and racist.
And Measurehead is a racist. And he's really strong, though. He's blocking the only, like, switch to open the door into... the harbor, so you can either pretend to agree with him and hope that you don't become a racist. I did not even want to try that.
Yes.
I was like, I don't know much about my player character, but I know he's too impressionable.
Yes.
So instead, I save scum so I could kick my Measurehead's ass.
Yes. Now, it is worth noting, I did manage to kick his ass on the first time. However, like with a lot of other things, there are actually, even if you don't want to put points into physical instruments, which is how you kick his ass, there are actually ways to be able to retry the check without that. For example, the leader of the scabs, there's a bunch of people outside the gate who are like, we want to work, we want to work, we're scabs. And if you talk to their leader, you can actually say, like, hey, do you have any pointers for, like, the big hunk of meat up there, how to maybe take him down? And he will literally tell you, like, oh, no, you're gonna try it first.
Mm-hmm. And if you fail, you can go back and be like, oops.
Yeah, you can go back, and he's like, all right, here, let me help you. However, this is good that you bring up, you have to pass a logic check. In order to actually subscribe to race to race theory.
Mm-hmm.
And this gets into pit stop number one, which is the ideology system.
Yeah.
So during your travels, there are multiple things that you can end up having opinions over, and you can end up voicing those opinions. The four main ideologies present here are communism. We know communism, left wing. In this game, it is headed by a man named Krasmazov, who died. And the communist revolution was put down pretty violently.
Mm-hmm.
Fascism, which is also still sort of a niche ideology, I believe, in this world. I obviously did not choose it, although I honestly might next time I play. I'm curious about it.
You're curious about fascism and you might choose it? Who are you? What did you do to Galen?
I want to get yelled at by Kim, damn it.
Why?
Because...
Look, Kim is like papyrus to me.
That's true.
It's like, I know I can hurt him, but I cannot.
Yeah.
I cannot bring myself to hurt him, despite the knowledge that I could.
So yeah, fascism. There is ultra-liberalism, which is liberalism in the literal sense of the core of the word, which is just capitalism.
Yeah.
It's just, I'm in it to get rich and make money, baby.
It's closer to sort of real-world libertarianism.
Yes.
In that it's, like, full free market, full, you know, I've got mine. that type of stuff.
Yeah. And then there's moralism, which is the pithy centrist option.
Yes. Moralism is great because it's defined as a belief that in the future things will be better, so why worry about it now?
Yeah. it's also, like, it is, I love it so much because it's also, like, this is a game that I don't think it exactly criticizes you for being a centrist, but it does make fun of it a lot, where it's like, I think one of the first things that you can, like, basically say about it is, like, if being a moralist means choosing the option that doesn't, that doesn't actually answer the question, then I absolutely am one and also am not one.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, they make fun of every standpoint. All four of those are made fun of to a degree.
Yes.
So just a background of the Communist Revolution in Revachol. The backstory of the game is that Revachol wanted to secede and be independent, and it formed its own sort of communist state. For one thing, this failed spectacularly. One of the sort of important background details is the collapse of the People's Pile, which was their attempt to make a nuclear reactor so they could have energy independence. And they didn't think it through well enough, and there were some major problems that they couldn't solve. And thus they had a meltdown, and it ruined the ecology of the surrounding waters.
Yep.
One of the NPCs, there's a shopkeeper who is a vet who was, like, pretty horribly radiation poisoned by it. Also, as it turns out, the rest of the world did not like this and kind of just brought all their warships together and gunned down Revachol.
Yep.
Revachol used to be this, like, fancy resort town for a lot of the world before it went independent, and now it's just ruins. You can still see bullet holes and cannon shells on, like, the walls of the city in Martinez.
Yes.
And so one of the things about communism is they had this special form of communism where, like, they were convinced that by believing in communism hard enough, if enough people did it, they would have psychic powers. So they tried to stop the bullets with this belief that the bullets would stop, and it didn't work.
Yeah.
Which feels very pointed at that sort of, like, the sort of platitudes type of leftism that you see online.
Yeah.
That, like, you know, people talk about revolution and stuff like that, but they don't organize, they don't do things in the community. There is a communist meeting you could go to, and it's two people who complain about, like, F1 races, and then they just, like, try to psychically resonate. There's like a building design that was designed by an architect, and the building would never be structurally sound unless there were psychic energy holding it up. And apparently it was attempted to be built back when Revachol was independent, and it didn't work. And so when you go to the communist meeting, you see them trying to make it out of, like, boxes, and it keeps collapsing every time.
Yeah, this game is really, 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 really good about exploring ideologies from a massive wide variety of angles, whereby there's a lot of various little things that I just love with, like, how it does satire, how it does genuine, genuinely good, like, you know, looking at these things. For example, to bring up Measurehead again, Measurehead is one of my favorite characters, specifically because I love the satire, the inherent perfect sort of pitch-perfect criticism of a guy who has tattooed measurements onto himself to prove he is superior. That is so good of, like, fascist critique. Because it's like, on one hand, yes, he is a big, strong man. Like, you know, he is a big guy. He can beat you up pretty easily, unless you beat him up first. But when you boil down fascism as the actual ideology, like, it's all sort of posturing. It's all putting on a big face. It needs these ideological symbols. It needs, you know, this, like, race-based science to be true and for people to see it and think that it's true. Because the moment you question it, it really just crumbles down. and it really just gets a little silly.
Yeah, it's like he's already strong as it is. It's hard to beat his ass in a fight. He doesn't need these measurements to like show how strong he is or whatever.
Yeah,
it's this very unnecessary like addition that makes it feel like he's more insecure about himself than that he's actually what he purports.
Yeah, which is highlighted from the fact that one of the other ways to get a little boost in trying to beat him up is you can actually straight up logically argue with a lot of his fascist points. Like one of my favorite ones is you ask him like, okay, where are you from? And he's like, I'm descended from a proud race of, you know, blah, 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 that can trace their heritage 4,000 years. And you're like, okay, so you were born there? And he's like, my ancestors, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, so were you born there? And he's like, no, I was born in Revachol. And it's like, so you're from Revachol. You're not from there. And he, like, it's so, like, again, it's, you know, you can't logic out fascism and just expect to win. But, like, when you do apply actual logic to fascism and racism, it gets hilarious how little there actually is, how little of substance.
Yeah.
I also love that he hates the other race. Like, he hates the lorry driver. He himself literally points out that the lorry driver is not a good example of his supposed racial superiority. Because to highlight it, the little blurb you get is that the lorry driver shouts a welcome to Revachol to someone who has red hair, thinking that people with red hair are foreign.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's perfect. It's so on point with how it portrays racism.
And, like, the fact that the player kind of has this guided method through it, like, obviously, you could just, you know, inherently just find the fault in this belief system. But I like that the game goes out of its way to dissect it as well, like to pick apart all of its arguments. Like, it's not just that the player knows that this is a bad thing, but it then like illustrates exactly why, again, goes through this whole argument. It didn't have to do that to show like he is wrong.
Yeah.
Like, you could just be like, this is a character that is wrong. In a way, it kind of make sure that you know that the game does not like racism.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there's the whole problem of satire, where sometimes satire to certain groups can be too effective in appearing real. That is sort of why a lot of meme spaces end up getting co-opted by the right, is because, like, people find, like, satire of edgy stuff on the right, and then people think that it's serious, and then they go along with it for real.
Yeah. Copy paste basically all of Ian Danskin's work here.
Yeah, exactly. But so in by having this sort of long scene of you saying no way, of the player character saying like this is incredibly wrong, the game sort of tells you where it stands on this and where it doesn't want you to be.
Yeah. It also like, just the fact that you can become a fascist, the fact that you can subscribe to fascism, or for that matter, that you can subscribe to ultra-liberalism or centrism, or communism for that matter, doesn't mean that the game itself is like, it doesn't mean that the game itself is supporting that ideology. It's how the game chooses to present it and how the game chooses to let you go through with it that's really important. And the game itself, like, the game has very obvious and very clear things to say about all these facets of life. And, like, the way that it displays that through just having the player interact with it as a quote-unquote unbiased third party is, like, really, really good, really, really thematically resonant, really, really awesome.
Hey, this is post-production Matthew Marissa. And so this episode was recorded last year in December or November, I'm not sure when, and we're only now getting around to working on the next part of it, because we have been very busy. So excuse the sort of sudden interruption. We will resume the Disco Elysium next week. Until then, you can follow us on any podcasting platform you like. Give us a like, give us a rating, give us a review, let us know how we're doing, let us know what you think we should check out and or cover. You can follow us on Twitter at NetSurferPro, where we post little teasers for upcoming episodes, We should have some new teasers next week when the new next Disco Elysium part goes up. You can follow me on Twitter at Twackaroo. You can follow me on Twitch at twitch.tv/twack. I stream on weekdays from usually sometime afternoon, like noon or one, to later in the afternoon. I stream competitive games, roguelites, single player games that are kind of weird and quirky. I've been playing the puzzle game Bonfire Peaks, and I'm hoping to start Pizza Tower soon and or Pikmin 2. So check that out if that seems cool. You can follow Galen on Twitter at Galen Wilson with a zero, GalenWilson0n. You can follow him on Tumblr at Galen Wilson. I believe his TikTok is Galen Wilson, but with a zero, so GalenWilson0n. And you can follow him on Twitch at Machine Gun Vampire. Thanks for checking this out, and I'll see you later.